Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamiġjub li l-kombixu għatajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today an art historian, Christian Attard. Just a few words about Mr. Attard. He's been very much interested in art virtually all his life. He studied at the School of Art and at the University of Malta, from where he graduated BA Honours and MA. For his first and second degrees, he was mainly interested in 19th and 20th century art, but has now changed direction completely, focusing on the 18th century with a special emphasis on the visual culture of death. Mr. Attard teaches history of art at the Giovanni Kurmihaya Secondary at Nashar and at the Malta School of Art in Valletta, and he also lectures at the University of Malta. He's married and has two young children, Sarah and Noah. Welcome to you.
Thanks for asking me to come to this program.
This title of your thesis, which is The Visual Culture of Death in Malta, 1675 to 1813, sounds like quite a sort of macabre thing to study, but of course one can imagine that death was very close to everybody at that time.
Yeah.
Very present on a daily and very close basis. So I can imagine that would be of interest. Why were you drawn to it, in fact?
Okay, it's a subject that fascinated me for quite a long time. But going back to your idea that this is a very macabre subject, I'd like to point out that up to, let's say, 200 years ago, even less perhaps, life was considered to be a preparation for death. So actually, during the first day, when you're here on this world, you are born, actually people would have started preparing you for your actual demise. So it was just a preparation for death. So actually, the art of death, so to speak, is very much the art of life, because it helps people understand the afterlife, which was considered an even more important part of their life. Anyway, so life was just this transient moment which would pass very, very quickly. Actually, people would die at 30, 40 at the most. So they were much more concerned with the afterlife because that was for eternity. Whereas here was just a couple of years and that's it. So as I've said, the art of death usually is not that. Sometimes it is macabre. But more often than not, it is quite positive, actually. It shows a positive aspect of that. So, okay, let's prepare ourselves for our death because there's something better waiting for us. So what may sound macabre, and sometimes it is, I have to acknowledge that, may not completely be, actually. Sometimes there is this hope, they used to call it, and healing, so to speak. So art gave people something that looks like hope, you know, the hoping for a better life after this world. Even we have to remember that more often than not, life was very difficult for the common people.
Short and brutal.
Incredibly brutal, yes. So that's it, actually. So it's a very interesting subject because it is about that, but I think it is much more about life and hope.
The art was also explanatory to a certain extent. It was trying to explain a situation or recount a situation. I mean, one can imagine the death pictures of the martyrs, for example. I suppose that would have gone into, so it was like a history book, really.
Yes, in a way, yes. And the good deaths of martyrs and saints, that helped people in a way to prepare their own death in a way very similar to the death of martyrs. So even when looking at a picture, at an image of the death of the Madonna or the Dormition, as we would say, or the death of Saint Joseph, surrounded by his family with angels floating and what have you, that would have helped people. They must have said, okay, my death must be something like that, the good death, they used to call it. they were very afraid of the bed death. That is, the sudden death. That was terrible. Because if you died suddenly, that is, without any preparation, then there's a good chance for you to go, that you're going to hell. But anyway, the church invented, or there's a dogma of purgatory. I have to be very careful here.
Of course.
The dogma of purgatory, which this is a kind of intermediary place, so to speak. So more often than not, people believed that at least, if not to heaven, at least they're going to purgatory. And purgatory, even though it is ugly, that this is what the church believes, it's almost like hell, actually, with fires and what have you. But that was a hopeful place. So you stay there, your family would pray for you, and in a little while, it could take hundreds of years, but anyway, in a little while, considering all the time in the world, you would meet the God the Father. So, as I've said, the idea was very hopeful, but even the thing that you've mentioned, the pictures of martyrs, and the paintings of the death of saints and what have you, that would have helped people prepare their own death better.
And the kind of art that there was during that period, and also before, would have been at every level of artistic production, I suppose. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes,
the great artists,
right,
and right down to the sort of the very popular kind of art.
Very good. In fact, in my research I'm carrying out, I'm definitely not going to focus on the good artists, just the good officers. They are there, Matteo Preti, Anthony van Dyck, and many others. But obviously, this goes into the grassroots level. So I'm going to tackle even Santini, for example, these printed pictures, which are not artistic in many ways, but I think they give us a further piece of this jigsaw puzzle I'm trying to create here. You know, sedantures, ledger stones, I've written here, all kind of religious kitsch, you know, it can help me understand the subject a little bit better. So, okay, there's the high art, the fine art, But there is the popular thing as well, which you have correctly mentioned.
Including ex voto, I suppose.
Yes, definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
The things that come to mind.
Echo, very good. The ex voto play a very important role here. And obviously, one good portion of my study is going to focus specifically on ex voto.
And we've got plenty here in Malta.
Yes, quite a lot, actually, quite a lot. The thing is that some of them are, and many of them are 19th century, but some of them are actually 17th and 18th century.
The two dates that you've chosen are particularly significant in Maltese history. What do they refer to?
Okay, so I've bracketed my study in between the years 1675 1813, and obviously those two dates mark two terrible plague bouts. Especially the one in 1675, 1676, which killed more than 11,000, almost 12,000 people. It must have been terrible.
Which one we would imagine would be probably have been a slightly less than half the population.
A good portion of the population, let's say. And 1813 is the same thing. It wasn't as terrible, but it was another important, let's say, plague. Since I think that the plague, obviously, is linked directly with death, for obvious reasons, and plagues would inform the art of death. So I thought it would be a very interesting thing to bracket my study within these two days. So instead of simply saying the art of death during the 18th century or the 19th century, I said, let's use two historical dates. Those two dates are interesting historically as well, as you've mentioned, since they give me the opportunity to move from the time of the knights to the French, to the British. So in a way, it's very interesting as well, because there is change, and one can analyze whether this political change really affected my subject. I'm still finding out, actually. It should have, because we move from the Baroque mentality to the Enlightenment. So it should have influenced people's ideas about that. But as we all know, people are typically very, very resistant to change when it comes to their beliefs.
Very conservative. So
most probably there wouldn't be a great change. That's what I'm envisaging.
In your description of what you're doing, you say that you're looking into the range of religious beliefs, doctrines, and the rituals and mores in Malta. So there's a whole, it seems, a whole culture with regards to death, that, as you say, may or may not have changed over those centuries that you're going to be dealing with. More or less, what were those doctrines and rituals? I mean, obviously, we'd need a long time to talk about them all, but just generally.
Okay, one very important more or idea was the idea of purgatory, which I'm going to deal with in some depth. This was an old idea, but it came definitely to the fore during the Baroque period, after the Counter-Reformation, that is. The Church stressed their position that purgatory does exist. And this actually informed people in many ways, because when you were about to die, that would have given you some comfort. You might have said, okay, I'm going to die, but maybe my life wasn't completely perfect, but at least there is this intermediary place where I can stay for a little while, and then hopefully I'll go to heaven. But there was the idea as well of the rest of the family, because the rest of the family would pray and give money to the church so that the church would carry out these masses to honor the soul of the dead. That is in purgatory, that is. So it was, there was this whole thing going around purgatory. It wasn't just a belief, it was a complete system, actually. Some cynic scholars may tell you that, okay, the church was using the idea of purgatory to make money. I think it's too simplistic. It was a real belief, and people believed in purgatory, and they had pictures all over the place, in churches, in wayside monuments, to make them think of purgatory. And they really believed that purgatory really existed. It was a geographical place, actually. In some accounts, people actually went, they claimed, to purgatory and came back, actually, recounting the stories, what they've seen there. There's an interesting museum in Rome, actually. It's called the Museo del Purgatorio, where there is, it's difficult to believe this, there is pictures and what have you, photographs of proofs that people really went to purgatory and came back, or at least of communication between the living people and their dead relatives. So yes, I think purgatory, the notion of purgatory, really informs the culture of death in many ways. Then there are other things that I'm going to discuss. Obviously, there's the folklore aspect as well. For example, the role of the paid mourners, which in Malta, obviously, this thing happened. There are some very interesting writings by some Maltese ethnographers and people who write about folklore. Augusto Soldanes talks about the rituals of death in Malta, Manuel Magri, Anton Cremona, and in more recent times, Joseph Kassar Pulicin and George Misut-Kirkop have also tackled the subject.
And the plague, in fact, itself has been the subject, of course, of great literature. I mean, one can think of Boccaccio, Foscolo, or also Manzoni, obviously, yes. Perhaps the greatest Italian novel, which was written in the 19th century, in the early 19th century. So the plague itself has had always, for a very long time, the central part in the culture of, certainly in Europe.
Yes. Obviously, a good portion of my study as well is going to focus on specifically on the plague, because obviously the plague was a reality. People had to live with it, and they knew that when the plague came, thousands of people would suddenly perish. So you couldn't forget that. You couldn't forget the plague, because they were very much there in front of their eyes. And obviously, a lot of literature was inspired, a lot of literature and a lot of art, actually, which visual art, that is, inspired by the plague. Okay, you've mentioned these authors, very, very interesting authors. Obviously, I'm going to deal with them in a little bit because obviously they informed the whole context of my study. But obviously, I will be more interested in the visual side of the thing. And I think, well, that's quite rich when it comes to the paintings of that in some way deal with the plague. And that is going to be a good portion of my study, actually. And if you go inside many churches in Malta, the older churches especially, you do find older pieces or smaller paintings that somewhat, somehow or another, deal with the plague.
The recently you gave a lecture on your work, and which was illustrated with this picture. So obviously, our listeners can't actually see the picture, but we'll describe it for them. And it tells a lovely story. Perhaps you'd like to tell us that story and sort of describe the picture as well, which isn't a very big one. You said it's about A3 size or something like that.
It's quite a small painting. It's in the Carmelite Priory in Valletta.
Can one actually see it? Or
you can see it. You obviously have to ask for permission. You cannot simply go.
It's not in a gallery or something.
No, it's not. It's in a room, actually, in the priory. But obviously, if you ask nicely enough, most probably you will be let in. Okay, so it's a small painting depicting this very important plague saint, Santa Rosalia. Obviously, Santa Rosalia today is known as Palermo's main patron saint. But Santa Rosalia is also Palermo's plague saint, which simply means that people, the Palermitans in this case, would have prayed Santa Rosalia, hopefully, to stop the plague. And her cult in Palermo started exactly in 1624, when Palermo was suffering terribly through a terrible plague, actually.
They knew about her before, didn't they? But
yes,
so how
definitely.
Did she suddenly
it's
come to the
fore? It's a strange story, actually. So Santa Rosalia, in actual fact, at least this is how the story goes, was a 12th and 11th century anchorite. A hermit saint, that is. So she existed before 1624. She had a small cult, not a very important one, but suddenly, she was rediscovered in 1624. The story goes that there was this hunter. His name must have been either Vincenzo Bonello or Matteo Bonello, who, whilst he was on Monte Pellegrino, that famous mountainous promontory to the north of Palermo, he said that he was guided by a dream and he discovered the relics, the bones, that is, of Santa Rosalia. The dream also told him that if he were to carry these bones in a kind of procession throughout the streets of Palermo, the plague would cease. This is what happened. The plague, in actual fact, didn't cease because it would only stop almost 2 years later. But still, the Palermitans believe, and still believe, actually, that Santa Rosalia really stood out for them, really, really helped them. Throughout the whole process, the Jesuit order really did their utmost, for some reason, to promote the cult of this new saint. Because the thing is that the Palermitans had other protector saints, that they had four female protector saints before Santa Rosalia, which were very hastily discarded and substituted by this new saint, Santa Rosalia.
The painting itself is I don't know how true the colors are in this printout that I have, sort of dark with the sort of ochre,
quite dark, yeah.
Ochre color. We've got Santa Rosalia looking up towards a cherub. At her feet are three dead people, dead by contagion, by the looks of it. And of course, there's a little bit of a landscape in the background. Was this painting painted in Palermo and brought to Malta specifically? How much do we know about the history of the painting?
Actually, we know next to nothing, actually nothing. So I think it must have been painted in Malta, because the cult of Santa Rosalia entered Malta in 1675, so 50 years later, when Malta was suffering, just like Palermo 50 years before, the plague. So under the reign of Nicholas Cottoner, at the time he was the Grand Master, the cult enters Malta. So I think that this painting was painted in Malta when the cult entered Malta after 1675, that is. Possibly, but it's just a stylistic attribution. by Giuseppe d'Areno, who was an Italian artist, actually, who lived in Malta, very much connected with the studio of Mattia Preti. So you've discussed the angel there in the corner of the painting, and it's interesting that the angel is about to sheath his sword. That is an obvious symbol of the end of the plague. So the simple fact that the angel is about to sheath his sword, that in people's minds must have registered as this is the end of the plague. Now, okay, there are the three people dead there just next to Saint Rosalia, but this is going to stop now. This terrible idea, this bad dream is going to stop. And the angel is very much there, symbolizing the end of this disease.
And they would have perhaps brought out this picture at that moment in the hope that...
I don't know, actually. Most probably it would have been used during these terrible times to offer some kind of hope, obviously, because all these plague saints, that was their job, mainly, to give some hope to the people that, yes, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
And can you give other examples? Are there other examples that can be seen in the churches that come to mind?
Yes, a little while ago I did this talk about Santa Rosalia, so they're quite fresh in my mind at the moment. Yes, paintings of Santa Rosalia crop up in many different villages.
This isn't the only one?
No, definitely not. It's not the only one. If you go to Rendi, there is this late 18th century painting that depicts Santa Rosalia and Saint Roque. Saint Roque was another plague saint, actually. It was painted, or at least it's dated, 1775, which is exactly a century after the plague. So most probably the descendants, the Rendi descendants of the ones who died 100 years before, decided to commission an artist to create this altarpiece. But I think the most interesting painting in Malta of Santa Rosalia is in the church of Sarria in Floriana. Now that very beautiful church, the centrally planned structure in Sarria, that was designed by Mattia Preti during the reign of Nicholas Cotoner, once again. That is a votive church. It was built soon after the end of the plague of 1675-1676. And there, the order decided to put the paintings of the main plague saints, so Saint Sebastian, Saint Roque, and Santa Rosalia. There is Saint Nicholas as well, an altarpiece dedicated to him, who is not a plague saint, but he is the patron saint. He was the patron saint of Nicholas Cotton. So there was just
a
vested interest there. But there in this church of Sarria, there is this very interesting painting by Mattia Preti depicting this hermit saint, Santa Rosalia, praying for the end of the plague. In the background of the painting, Mattia Preti's painting, there are two undertakers, hardly visible, but they're very much there, who are burying corpses, actually. So Mattia Preti connects Rosalia with that, with the plague as well.
And you mentioned Saint Roque and also Saint Sebastian.
Saint Sebastian,
course.
Definitely.
I wasn't aware before I did a little bit of reading for this interview that actually Saint Sebastian was a plague saint. I wasn't aware of that.
Okay, you're quite right there, because it's strange, because nowhere in the stories connected with Saint Sebastian is plague mentioned. So Saint Sebastian is a very elusive kind of plague saint. He is considered to be one of the most important plague saints, but at the same time, his story is not linked with the plague. There's no link whatsoever. He was simply a soldier during the time of Diocletian, and Diocletian's army, who at some point decided to convert to Christianity. He kept his conversion a secret to help the Christians until he was discovered, and then he was martyred. First he was shot with arrows, he survived the first ordeal, and then he was beaten to death and thrown in the Roman sewer, in the Cloaca Maxima. So it's a terrible story once again. But plague is never mentioned in the older stories, in the older narratives. At some point, very early on, actually, in the very early centuries of the Christian Church, he becomes a plague saint. Now, scholars try to link what happened, why was suddenly Saint Sebastian elevated to this position of a plague saint. Some would like to say that the first martyrdom of Saint Sebastian, that is, he was shot with arrows, the arrows themselves, could be a symbol of the plague. And since he survived the martyrdom, so that would have offered some kind of hope. So plague, symbolized by the arrows, yes. He survived the arrows, so he survived the plague. It could well be. It's an interesting story, but we cannot really be sure whether this is what happened or not.
And Saint Roch, who is again very popular. I mean, I can picture in my mind a couple of corner statues in Rhodes, or even in Valletta.
Yes, definitely. Yes, Saint Roch's story, at least tradition, is more linked with the plague, because he was this pilgrim from the south of France who travelled to Rome, and whilst he was travelling, actually, he really got the plague, so got infected. But when he realized that he got the plague himself, he simply cut himself from the rest of society. A dog, that is why he's always represented with a dog, at least this is how the story goes, used to give him food, to bring him food, so he kept him alive. And then, miraculously, he survived the plague. So, in this case, it makes sense. Saint Roch is definitely linked with the cult of the plague, or with the idea of the plague, because he survived the plague as well, so he would have offered hope to the people. He's a better plague saint than Saint Sebastian, in a way.
He's got a stronger case, really, isn't he?
That's it.
Definitely. And do we have paintings of Saint Roch as well?
Yes, definitely.
In Malta?
Yes, definitely. One of them I've just mentioned. It's by Mattia Priet in the Sarria Church. One of them I've mentioned as well, in the Rendi Church. He is next to Santa Rosalia. And the Mosta Church, there's a very interesting painting made by Erardi, Stefano Erardi, who was one of the most important Maltese Baroque artists. Obviously, the painting used to belong to the old church, not the Gronia da Vas church. Then eventually it was enlarged a little bit to fit its new place in the rotunda.
That's often happened,
yes. There in this very interesting painting, we have the three plague saints, Santa Rosalia, Saint Roch, and Saint Sebastian. So
they were really determined that time.
That's it. So if you go to pray there, most probably you'll survive the plague.
And will your studies take you outside of Malta at all to see other plague paintings abroad?
Yes, definitely so. Obviously, I'm going to deal with Malta. I'm going to focus on Malta. But obviously I have to see the thing within a whole context. And Italy definitely plays a very important role here, because many of the ideas, cultural and artistic, did come from Italy. We have to also remember that Malta was under the Knights. The Knights came from all over Europe, so it could well be that ideas came even from further afield, not just from Italy, but from all the places from where the Knights came, Spain, France, and what have you. So definitely I have to widen the context. I'm going to focus on Malta, but within a very, very wide context. I've been to Rome and to Palermo, and I have to definitely to do some research in Naples as well, because some very interesting ideas about death and plague did develop there, and in some way they would influence Malta. Just a simple link between Naples and Malta would be Mattia Preti. Mattia Preti lived in Naples just before coming to Malta. So
he would have brought over some ideas with him.
In fact, he had painted Santa Rosalia before he came to Malta. So this link between Mattia Preti and Santa Rosalia happened before Mattia Preti came to Malta in 1661.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. Thank you very, very much,
thanks,
Christian Attard, for coming
Thank
to speak
much.
To us about visual images of the plague. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom biex xewqat tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.